Thank you, Daniel, and thank you to everyone who's come today. I really appreciate it. Since we've all put a lot of work into our research, we appreciate people coming to listen. What I'm presenting today is actually part of a larger work that I'm doing on God's glory in the Old Testament. And a couple of years ago, I presented on God's glory in the book of Exodus, if you might remember, Show Me Your Glory. And this is now a preliminary research that I'm doing on the book of Ezekiel. And there's a handout for this if you didn't get one. The prophet Ezekiel encountered the glory of the Lord in a profound way while living in exile in Babylon. God's glory appears to Ezekiel in three spectacular visions and in a prophetic oracle, which shaped his ministry and message. Altogether, there are 18 references to God's glory in the book of Ezekiel. In this paper, I'm going to briefly look at some of these occurrences of the divine glory in the book, and to see what we learn about the nature of God and his relationship to his people. We will find that the divine glory is the visible manifestation of God's presence with his people in exile, and that the movement and actions of the divine glory will usher in both judgment and salvation for his people, becoming part of the message of the book. Ezekiel was a prophet, as I mentioned, ministering to a group of community who had been exiled from Jerusalem in Babylon. There were a number of deportations to Babylon, and Ezekiel was part of the group that went in 598, before the temple had actually been destroyed. He ended up in exile, and it was 5 years after he had arrived into Babylon in exile that he received a call from the Lord to become a prophet. And there are very many dates in the book, so we are able to date a lot of the prophecies. As a result, you can group the book into two sections. The first part focusing on prophecies before the fall of Jerusalem, which occurred in 587-86. And secondly, prophecies that occurred after the fall of Jerusalem. And we notice that the theme of the earlier first part of the book focuses on oracles of judgment, warning of coming judgment. And the second half of the book focuses primarily on salvation and restoration of God's people. And we'll find that the glory of the Lord appears in both major sections of the book. So in the beginning of the book, God's glory appears in a vision in chapters 1 to 3, which is part of the context of Ezekiel's call to be a prophet. Here he has a fantastic vision of God enthroned on the cherubim chariot called Merkavah in Hebrew. The revelation of God's glory in exile demonstrates that God has not abandoned his people, but is with them in exile. The Lord still reigns, not just in Zion, but also in exile. Moving on to chapters 8 through 11, we find in the first temple vision, Ezekiel is transported to Jerusalem in a vision where he sees God's glory gradually departing from the temple and the city of Jerusalem. And this becomes an ominous sign of coming divine judgment. The divine glory departs because of the idolatry and abominations that have been committed in the temple and in the land. In this context, the departure of the divine glory becomes part of the message of divine abandonment and divine judgment. God's glory then also appears in chapter 39, verse 21, in that very strange, mysterious oracle against Gog, the enemy. In that context, we also have a restoration oracle, where we find that Ezekiel 39:21 tells us that Yahweh has set his glory among the nations, and all the nations will see God's justice and power. The revelation of God's glory among the nations becomes part of the message of salvation. Finally, God's glory appears in chapters 43 to 44 in the second temple vision. Ezekiel sees God's glory coming back from the east, returning to the temple and filling the temple with his glory as part of the vision of the restoration of the city and the temple and God's people in the larger context of chapter 40 to 48. The return of God's glory becomes the climax of the vision and the book as a whole. It becomes part of the message of salvation and restoration proclaimed in the book of Ezekiel. The Lord is with his people. You will note that the terminology for divine glory varies slightly in the book. For the most part, you see this phrase, Kavod Adonai, the glory of Yahweh, or the glory of the Lord. But we also have a phrase called the glory of the God of Israel, And then a shorter form, just referring to the glory, or my glory, or his glory. I'm not going to go into detail of all these passages. You could either take my course on the book of Ezekiel, which I'm probably teaching next year, and or you can read the book when it's done. Anyway, but I'm going to go back to chapters 1 to 3. God's glory appears at the beginning of the book, as you know, with this spectacular vision that Ezekiel has. What do we learn about God's glory from this first passage? In Ezekiel 1:28, Ezekiel describes the whole vision of God enthroned on the chariot throne as, quote, the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. This vision then is followed by that specific call to become a prophet in chapters 2 and 3, followed by two more appearances of God's glory in chapter 3, 12, and 23. So what did Ezekiel see? Ezekiel saw a bright storm cloud approaching from the north with lots of lightning and flashes of fire continually. And then he saw these strange creatures referred to as living creatures, and later on in chapter 8 through 11 they're referred to as cherubim, carrying this wheeled chariot. And on top of that is a platform and a throne. And upon the throne, there is a man or someone. There's a description of a human figure, a man on fire, radiating, it says, as of the colors of the rainbow. Ezekiel then describes that whole vision as the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. Regarding this vision, Daniel Block, who's written two volumes on the book of Ezekiel, writes, with respect to force and awesomeness, no theophany in the entire Old Testament matches Ezekiel's inaugural vision. John Kutzko also asserts, regarding Ezekiel, this contains the most graphic portrayal of the divine presence in the Hebrew Bible. I too will argue that the divine glory depicted here is the most elaborate and awesome one in the Old Testament. It's a fantastic vision beyond human comprehension. So what do we learn now about God's glory in the context of Ezekiel's call to be a prophet? The first thing that we learn is that God's glory is associated with his presence. In other words, the divine glory is the visible manifestation of the divine presence, becoming a sign that God is truly present. As you know, there are a number of biblical texts that says that no one can see God. But here, the glory represents God. Many have noted that this vision of the glory is very anthropomorphic. What we mean by that, assigning human characteristics to God. So we find in Ezekiel's description that the glory arises, the glory stands, the glory speaks. And this is what we call anthropomorphism. Although we have this most graphic portrayal of God's presence in the Old Testament, we also discover that it defies description. Peter DeVries have written the following. Ezekiel's description of the Kavod Yahweh, which is the Hebrew word for glory, Kavod Yahweh, is the more elaborate than any other Old Testament writers. And then he writes, it highlights the dual and paradoxical nature of the divine glory as both defying verbal description and being potentially visible. End of quote. Block has also noted Ezekiel's frustration in trying to find adequate expression for what he has seen. The glory of Yahweh defies human expression verbally and visually. If we read the text carefully, we actually discover the difficulty that Ezekiel's having. He uses words like, as, appearance, likeness. He's using the language of analogy throughout the whole chapter. How do you describe snow to someone who's never seen snow? How do you describe the glory of God to someone who's never seen the glory of God? We use language that we're familiar with, and we compare the unknown with what we know. And so this is what Ezekiel's trying to do in comparing what he's seeing. So the challenge of trying to express his describe his experience adds actually to the notion of awesomeness, the otherness of God, the holiness of God, and the transcendence of God. In Ezekiel's attempt to describe what he saw and heard, it is clear that God's glory is associated with brilliant light, radiance, brightness, fire. Notice all the references to flashes of lightning, fire, amber, gleaming metal. We already heard about that earlier. Various colors of the color of the rainbow. There's also sound, the sound of wings, the sound of rushing water, the sound of the army camp. And there's the sound of speech. God speaks. His voice emanates from the glory. The brilliant light that emanates from the divine glory is also found in chapter 10, verse 4. As the glory fills the temple with the cloud, the bright cloud, it describes that it's very bright. And we find it also in chapter 43, verse 2, where we find the whole earth is filled or shines with God's glory. It says it shines with God's glory, this association with light and brightness. It's also very significant that God's glory appears in exile. The revelation comes in a time of disillusionment and lack of hope, both for the exilic community as a whole and also for the prophet Ezekiel, who had been called to be a priest and never got to fulfill his calling as a priest. So the message is communicated in seeing this divine vision of God's glory, that God is truly with his people in exile. This becomes part of the hope of the book, that God has come to make a temporary home. Ezekiel 11:16 says he's come to be a sanctuary for them for a while in exile. So God is with them outside the promised land. God comes to dwell in a foreign land. His presence has no limitations. He's omnipresent. He's everywhere. And as he comes as a ruler who reigns over the earth. Just as God was with the Israelites in the wilderness 40 years, for 40 years, he is now present with them in exile in a foreign land. There are a number of parallels between the wilderness experience and the exile experience, but we don't have time to talk about that today. So read my book. Anyway, we find the depiction of Yahweh enthroned as king in the spectacular vision is also significant in light of Zion theology. And scholars actually talk quite a bit about this as they discuss the book of Ezekiel. The central belief of Zion theology was that God is eternally enthroned in the temple in Jerusalem in Zion. And because of that, God will protect Jerusalem, protect his throne, protect Zion. However, we find here that Ezekiel sees God enthroned in exile, not in Jerusalem, but in exile. He reigns over the whole earth. John Kutzko writes, he points out that Ezekiel's vision answers the question, was God's presence available outside the temple, outside Jerusalem, even in exile? The answer is yes. Notice that God's glory is actually appearing in 593 while the temple is still standing in Jerusalem before it has been destroyed. He has a vision of God's glory in exile. Finally, in this first vision, God's glory is revealed in the context of a divine call to prophetic ministry. God speaks and God commissions Ezekiel. What's the theological significance of this? As God's messenger, the Lord will be with Ezekiel. Daniel Block writes, the glory symbolizes more than mere presence. It reminds the one who is called of the supreme majesty and sovereignty of the one who has called him, and by association, the privilege of vocation. End of quote. What a privilege for Ezekiel to serve such a God that he's just seen in this vision. Now, what is Ezekiel's response to this revelation of God's glory? He has a physical response. He falls on his face before the glory. He has the same physical response in the final temple vision in chapter 43 and chapter 44. It's an appropriate response in light of the awesomeness of this vision. Ezekiel is truly awestruck, filled with awe and reverence for the Lord. Let's move quickly to Ezekiel chapter 8 through 11, the second vision of God's glory. In these chapters, God's glory appears about a little bit over a year after his first encounter with God's glory, because we have a date for this vision. Ezekiel is transported in a vision to Jerusalem. Remember, he's in exile in Babylon, but he's transported in a vision to Jerusalem. And in this vision, he sees God's glory slowly departing from the city, from the temple and the city. And this becomes this ominous sign of the coming judgment. The divine glory departs because of the idolatry that's being committed in the temple and in the land. Notice the slight change in terminology here. We do have this phrase, the glory of the God of Israel, in chapter 8:4 and 9:3. We also see it in 43:2. notice the connection. It's not just the glory of God, it's the glory of God of Israel. Yahweh is the God of Israel. No other God deserves that place. In light of this, Daniel Block comments on this. While this designation may be interchangeably used with Kavod Adonai, the glory of Yahweh, the form, the glory of God of Israel, the form highlights the spiritual treachery represented by the pagan image and all the abominations described in the following scenes. Yahweh is the divine patron of the nation. Israel has no business warring after other gods. End of quote. So we see the glory representing the divine presence departing. In this context, the divine glory becomes associated with divine abandonment and divine judgment. And the judgment will be by fire. If you look, the coals of fire that's used to pour out over the city comes from between the cherubim, representing this chariot where God is enthroned. So this punishment is coming directly from Yahweh. John Kutzko ties the theme of divine abandonment with the theme of theodicy. This wrestling with trying to reconcile the suffering and judgment and the justice of God, as well as the absence of God. These are questions of theodicy. God's glory becomes associated with that judgment. The actions and the movement of the divine glory becomes part of the message of warning of coming judgment, divine departure, divine absence. Yet there is a paradox. Divine absence from Jerusalem does not mean complete divine absence. God is present with his people in exile. The actions of the divine glory also highlights the holiness of the Lord. God cannot tolerate sin. And the temple precincts had become a place of idolatry and sin. And this leads to the divine wrath and divine judgment. The people had actually abandoned their calling to be a holy people, as Yahweh is holy. And thus God was abandoning them in this vision. So we see the divine king rising from his throne in the Holy of Holies and departs from the temple and from the city. The departure of the glory signals the end of a relationship that existed for almost 400 years. The divine king has abandoned his residence in the temple. In departing from the temple and the city, we see the divine glory moving east to the mountain that's east of the city, which we would call the Mount of Olives. Whether the glory remains on that mountain or continues east into Babylon, or, as some have suggested, returns to its heavenly abode, this is all debated among scholars. What is clear, though, is that the divine glory has left the temple and the city, signifying divine abandonment, as divine judgment will soon be poured out in the city, which did happen historically with the Babylonian destruction in 587-86. Although the departure of God's glory from the temple is seen as tragic, raising questions of a theodicy, it also introduces, and of course introduces the judgment theme we've already mentioned. There is also this introduction of hope, because Ezekiel has experienced God's glory in exile. The glory has moved east all the way into Babylon with his people in exile. Let's move on to chapter 39 in this tour, chapter 38 and 39. In the second half of the book, after now the fall of Jerusalem has occurred, the oracles of Ezekiel begin to focus on salvation and the restoration of his people through chapters 34 to the end of the book, chapter 48. If you look at chapters 34 to 39, there's a focus on the divine work of spiritual renewal and transformation of the people of God and Yahweh's victory over his enemies. And then, of course, chapter 40 to 48 reveals the restored city and the new temple. In chapter 34 through to 39, we find this one reference to God's glory in chapter 39:21, in the context of the prophecy against the mysterious enemy named Gog. In the context of the larger restoration oracle we find in this chapter, Ezekiel 39:21 tells us that Yahweh will set his glory among the nations, and all the nations will see God's justice and God's power upon them. Divine justice is seen as a defeat of the enemy, which leads to the restoration of God's people. Judgment and salvation are linked. Not only will Gog be judged, in the context of 39:23, the nations will see God's justice in his judgment on Israel, which brought them into exile in the first place. But that's not the end of the story. The nations will also see Israel's salvation and restoration in their return to the land, 39:27. The house of Israel will acknowledge the Lord again, 39:22. They will know the Lord, this famous recognition formula that occurs many times in the book of Ezekiel. God's people will know and acknowledge the Lord. God will no longer hide his face, but instead will pour out his spirit upon his people, Ezekiel 39:29. As a result, God will glorify himself, Ezekiel 39:13, and will be sanctified through them, Ezekiel 39:27. God's name will be honored and glorified. God's glory is not tied to the promised land of Israel. God's glory can be seen in Babylon and among the nations of the world. Part of the future hope of the book of Ezekiel is that God's glory will be set among the nations and seen by the peoples, including Israel. In fact, this becomes part of the Old Testament hope as a whole. And there are many texts that will talk about the fact that all nations and all flesh will see the glory of the Lord one day. Isaiah 40, verse 5, for example. Let's look at the final chapters of Isaiah 43 and 44, the final appearance of God's glory. Again, in a vision where Ezekiel sees God's glory coming from the east, returning to the temple and filling the temple as part of the vision of restoration. The return of God's glory becomes the climax of the vision and the book as a whole. After the spiritual renewal and transformation of God's people and the defeat of the enemy, as we've seen in chapters 34 to 39, which is solely a work of God, now the divine glory returns. It becomes part of the message of salvation and restoration proclaimed in the book of Ezekiel. Since this second temple vision, by the way, is dated. It's dated to the 25th year of exile. So Ezekiel's been in exile for 25 years, half a jubilee. Jubilee is 50 years. It's also been 20 years since Ezekiel received his initial call and saw the vision in the first place. It's been 19 years since he saw the glory departing from Jerusalem. This vision is explicitly linked to those first and second visions in 43:3. Since Ezekiel describes the vision as being the same as what he saw by the Kebar Canal and the vision of the destruction of the city of Jerusalem, Ezekiel 43, verse 3. In these final texts, God's glory becomes associated with his salvation and the restoration of the people of God. In this context, we learn that the return of the divine glory causes the whole earth to shine with his glory. Chapter 43, verse 2. It impacts all of creation. Just as God's glory was set among the nations, God's glory fills the whole earth, not just the promised land, not just the temple in Jerusalem. As I've said, this becomes the hope of the Old Testament. The divine glory is again associated with light, shining brightly. Salvation, in fact, in general, is associated with light, in the prophets especially. If you look at Isaiah chapter 60, verses 1 to 3, God's favor has returned, once again shining upon his people. You may recall the Aaronic high priestly blessing from Numbers 6. The Lord has caused his face to shine upon them and has been gracious to them. He has lifted up his countenance, his face towards them, and granted them peace. And that's the image you have with the light, the glory having filled the earth at this point. The favor of God has returned. There are parallels between the glory filling this new reconstructed temple and the glory filling the tabernacle in chapter 40 of Exodus, but also the glory filling the temple in 1 Kings 8 and also 2 Chronicles 7. Block compares the return of the glory to the building of the tabernacle and the temple. Quote, in both instances, the arrival of the glory served as a visible seal of God's approval on the construction project. God had taken up residence in his palace, End of quote. In chapter 44, too, we also learn that the return of God's glory is permanent. The gate is shut. Never again will God abandon his people, but he will dwell among his people forever. Ezekiel 43, verse 7. God's glory makes his presence visibly manifest, is once more among his people. As the very concluding verse of the whole book of Ezekiel says, the last verse, Ezekiel 40, verse 35 says, the name of the city is, the Lord is there. The Lord is with his people. The response of Ezekiel seeing this divine glory is the same as 20 years earlier. Ezekiel again falls on his face each time he sees the glory. As Block points out, quote, the prophet's physical response, falling down on his face, indicates that neither years of reflection nor decades of divine service has dulled his sense of awe and terror at the sight of God's glory. End of quote. Ezekiel's familiarity with God did not take away his awe and his reverence. What is the ultimate message communicated through the divine glory in the book of Ezekiel? The ultimate message is that the Lord is there. The Lord is present with his people wherever they are. Emmanuel, God with us. As we vicariously experience the visions of God's glory through the written prophetic book of Ezekiel, what should be our response to these visions of God's glory? May we too never lose our sense of awe and reverence for God, no matter how long we've known the Lord or how many times we've experienced his divine presence. And may we too fall down and worship. Amen.